You are listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of September 14th, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Ribbon cut to open new grandstand. Arlington Area Renewal Project shifts gears and schools reopen.
The ribbon was cut on Thursday, September 10th, to mark the completion of a $200,000 seating and renovation project at the historic grandstand at Applejack Field at the Manchester Recreation Park. New stadium-style seating has been added to the bleacher seating at the grandstand, which now has a seating capacity of more than 500 people. Views of the field have been enhanced through the removal of some of the support beams. Town Manager John O'Keefe described some of the changes before the ribbon-cutting ceremony that officially opened the new grandstand.
It started actually with just the idea of removing the every other post. We've gotten a lot of feedback from that. And then we had done a master study of the stadium through Breadloaf, and they made some recommendations. This represents most of what they recommended. And so, you know, it started with the front posts, taking those out, but then it seemed to make sense to do the full renovation at that time. Because once you take out the middle post, it makes sense to sort of build out this area that we're sitting in now. So this whole area is pretty much new. You have to buy the specific seat, so we do have some software where you can actually click on the seat that you want, and you're guaranteed a seat. So it's not first come, first serve. I think that it's probably fair to say that we have the nicest stadium, the nicest little stadium in New England, between the grass and the grandstand.
The grandstand was originally built back in the 1870s to provide a place for visitors to take in the Manchester Fair and also became a harness racing track. In more recent years, the field has been steadily upgraded and now hosts not only local sports teams, but college and even professional and semi-professional squads. The COVID pandemic will put a limit on how many fans the facility can hold for now, but down the road, it's poised to host more sporting events that many hope will draw a new group of visitors to town. Several of the major backers of the grandstand project spoke at the ribbon-cutting ceremony.
It's pretty impressive here, and certainly you can tell that, you know, we're moving on to bigger and better things here for this community. But one of the goals of the Right Track Foundation is to enhance the vibrancy of our community by providing resources to improve recreational facilities for all to enjoy. This project does exactly that. It elevates the quality of our venue, which allows the town and the surrounding schools to bring in more events for the public to enjoy.
We're really proud as a community about these amenities. We, as an organization, these are the assets that allow us to go out and tell the outer world from outside Manchester what makes Manchester great, and together, putting these together with our hospitality venues, restaurants, hotels, retail shops, and the rec park, and all these great amenities at this field, make it a place that people want to be. And if you haven't noticed, I think during these strange times, people have decided that this is a place to be.
The story of today is really begins and ends in the same place, right? It's part of a much larger story. And the story is about how this community supports young people. 20 years ago, I was a girls lacrosse coach, and our practice field was right here. And I think we had this practice field because we were the newest sport, and we were the last one to claim a field. So we had this field that was kind of carved out of weeds. There was a cinder track that ran around the half mile course. And there was, of course, this magnificent grandstand. But it's the hard work and generosity of a couple of people, some dedication, some vision, and the determination that we're going to do what it takes for our young people to succeed.
Now it's time to play ball, and the boys and girls varsity teams from Burn Burton will be taking on their counterparts from St. Johnsbury on September 25th for homecoming matches. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. About 3 years ago, the Arlington Area Renewal Project was launched by a group of local residents who were concerned that the pride and spirit they felt used to characterize the town of Arlington was not as strong as before. Bringing back the shine to Arlington was one express goal, along with working with the local school district to help boost the school population, and by extension, the town population. The group held some of its early meetings at the Arlington Memorial High School, organizing into several different committees to focus on issues like housing, education, business development, and town government. Those meetings later shifted to the Arlington American Legion Hall, where they often featured special guest speakers, like Mary Powell, the former CEO of Green Mountain Power, along with several others. The meetings were held there until early this year, when the COVID-19 pandemic made in-person gatherings like those impossible. Creating the Office of Town Administrator for Arlington was one central goal, which was reached last year, and the position was filled by Nick Zayak earlier this year. The Friday afternoon farmers market was another outgrowth of the group's efforts. Rehabilitating workforce housing, an analysis of the town's fire department, and helping push forward a plan to create a 500-acre nature park on Red Mountain were other activities the Renewal Project took part in, among others. But now the project will be hitting the pause button. Colonel Jim Baker, a former Vermont State Police commander and Arlington resident, has been the executive director of the project since it was launched. Earlier this year, he was tapped by the Scott administration to take over as the state's commissioner for the Department of Corrections, which coincided roughly with the 3 years he agreed to help lead the renewal project. We had a chance to talk with Colonel Baker recently about his reflections in the past 3 years with the project and where things might be headed from here.
What prompted the AARP in the beginning, and what was the main mission that you guys had in mind when you first began, what, 3 years ago now, must be?
Three and a half years ago. It was just about 3 years ago right now that we had announced it. I think it was based on a white paper that Don Keown had done. He was in conversations with some people in town, and that white paper was presented to leadership at Mac Molding as a request from Mac Molding, because obviously, you know, they have an interest in Arlington, Sunderland, Sandgate, the Arlington area being a healthy place, because, you know, they need to draw on that in order to be a successful business. And so that white paper was done by Don, and it talked about some of the challenges that the town faced. And the suggestion was that some type of volunteer group with a leader would be put together to address some of those issues. And that's really how it got started.
So how, as you look back then over the past 3.5 years, how successful was it? Or is there still some unfinished business left?
Isn't there always unfinished business, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care what project you start on. Even if you build a house, it's always unleft areas to work on. You know, the plan all along was, this was graciously supported by Mac Molding. The plan was all along for 3 years. The goal was to try to get as much energy and synergy built in town as we could in 3 years, with focused on certain things that we wanted to accomplish. And I think looking back on it, we accomplished a good share. COVID kind of stopped things in its tracks, you know, and our last meeting, I believe, was in January. This is not the way we expected it to end. But when I look back on it, I think we've had quite a bit of success. And there's things going on right now that I think it's going to be 1, 2, 3 years down the road before you see the foundation was built, and now activity is happening. And I think the best is yet to come. Moving forward, the folks that were around and active in the renewal project, conversations will continue. And I think when we look back on it, what the future holds for this is almost a think tank type environment, where we may pull some folks together once in a while and have a conversation about ideas that float up. I think one of the exciting things is that we actually have been in contact with a couple folks who are willing to put resources, funds, to stimulate future activity. So there's a couple investors that want to remain anonymous that knew of our work, knew of some of the successes we had, and they're willing to take a look at individual projects that folks may be interested in starting, and they would provide some funding to stimulate that. So an example of that, Kate Bryant from the Health Center came forward with an idea to myself and Don Keelan about their staff has been working really hard supporting the community during COVID. They've put themselves at risk doing their work, and they wanted to find a way to reward those employees. So Kate came up with the idea, if we provided some funds, she would go around to various businesses in town and get gift certificates and give them to the employees. So we reached out for this person who wants to remain anonymous, and they were willing to put some funds up, and they're going to buy gift certificates as thank yous. But more importantly, the gift certificates are to businesses in town. So we just, not a big chunk of money, but we just, stimulated the economy by putting some money at the health center to say thank you to the employees, and they'll be able to go out the wayside and get a sandwich. And those are the kind of things we'll continue to do in the future. Some of them could be bigger and some of them could be smaller. But we do have a couple folks interested in supporting us. And I think, Andrew, the interesting thing is one of the folks, again, wants to remain anonymous, doesn't live in town, and doesn't even live in state full-time, but knows about the work that we were doing and really looked at the work that we had been doing before and realized that they wanted to support a small town that was trying to remake itself. So those are the kind of things that will be going on in the future.
With a hoped-for sale of the town's former Catholic church, hopefully moving forward, as well as arranging for the sale of the 500 acres on Red Mountain, an initiative being led by Arlington High School teacher Hooper Pickering, the final chapter of the project may not yet have been written. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. All across the North Shire, schools reopened for the start of what all will agree will be a different sort of school year from any that's come before. With the COVID-19 pandemic still widespread, schools, like businesses and other organizations, have had to take precautionary measures to reduce the chances of infections. Students, staff, and faculty members have all had routines upended and new ways of doing things devised. The state's Agency of Education has issued guidance on a variety of areas, from flushing waters from the school building plumbing systems to social, emotional, and mental health supports during COVID-19. But the state has also given school districts and schools much flexibility on how to structure their instruction, allowing some schools to choose full remote online teaching, others to go fully in-person instruction, to a hybrid model where some students are on campus or in a building part of the week and learning remotely at other times. There's a lot for building administrators, teachers, building staff, and students to absorb in this current new normal. So we touched base with several area educators to see how it was going so far. We started off at the Long Trail School in Dorset, where head of school Seth Linfield described how things were going.
Far more smoothly than we could have hoped for. And that's based upon the preparation that so many did to get ready and a generous spirit among our students, faculty, and whole community. So we're at our record high enrollment of approximately 225 students. About 50 of those students have elected to start the academic year on the ABBA distance learning program. So we have 175 students coming in on alternating days for the first 2 weeks. So we distributed to every single member of our community a Kinza Bluetooth thermometer. So before anyone even leaves their home, they take their temperature, they ask a whole set of other questions, get a green thumb, and then you can depart your home for campus.
Down in Arlington, School Superintendent William Bazek said he was pleased with the way the year had started off at Arlington schools.
It couldn't be better, Andrew. The children are back. They're learning. They're excited. Our teachers are excited. I have to give obviously a huge shout out to Principal Merrill and Principal Lacoste, who've just done a tremendous job over the summer getting ready. But and then when the children came, the teachers were happy. The students are happy. And, you know, things that we thought would be issues aren't. You know, we talked about, you know, whether children are going to wear masks or not. I mean, that was a big issue. Zero problems with the mask at all. They've been very responsible. We were worried about pick up and drop off, you know, whether the parents have been extremely cooperative. They've had to wait in line in a little bit. But really, no problems whatsoever. You know, everyone's healthy, knock on wood. The health checks have been going very well. There's not been any problems in the morning with those. And really, I have nothing but positives to say.
So you're doing, I'm assuming, I as I understand it, some sort of hybrid model, although it sounds like most of the time, both at the elementary school and at the middle and high school, you've got close to 100% in person. Is that how it's working?
It's probably about 90% at the elementary school. So at Fisher Elementary School, which we have about 220 students, we have, they go 4.5 days a week. Our natural GIST day, our junior ski instruction program day, is on Wednesday. So we went with that schedule. So they have a half day on Wednesday, but otherwise they're there full time. Most of them are in person. There is a remote learning option down at Fisher if people want that. At the high school, we it's probably a little bit lower. I'd probably say maybe, I'm not 100% sure, I can say 80, 85% of the students are in school, but definitely majority of them. They are here 4 days a week, and they have Wednesday as a remote learning day. One of the things we expect, and we hope we're wrong, but we do expect that we're going to may have to go to remote learning at some point this year. We hope we don't, but we want to be really prepared for it. So we are using that time as a gauge to make sure that we are getting much better at remote learning on our Wednesdays. So we went that. One of the things we heard from our community is why we're not doing it at the elementary school is, you know, we're a community where the parents really wanted their children back in school for, you know, things like food, daycare, you know, learning as well. But there's parents have to go to work. Most of our Arlington parents work, and they do count on, you know, the daycare aspect of school during the, September to June time frame.
Then it was over to Byrne Burton Academy, where we talked with Meg Kenny, the associate head of school.
So the reopening of school, we began last week with a slower ramp up, having orientation days. And I think those days really benefited our students and our teachers with getting comfortable with our new systems and protocols. We were able to work out a few kinks and then launch on Tuesday with our first day with half of our student population on campus. And, you know, it wasn't without its challenges. Technology, we had a power outage, we had our health app that families are completing before they arrive on campus went down. It's called Ruvna, and I think a lot of schools around the country were using it, and then all of their servers were bombarded at the same time. And they've since fixed that, so that was a one-day issue. And I think once teachers got on campus with their students and felt good, it feels good. It feels right to have kids back on campus. And I know that teachers are experimenting with what it's like to have some in front of them and then some at home, and how best to build community and make connections with kids. I think I've been encouraging them to be ready for now and try, be ready for now, learn from what you experience, and then adapt and change. And teachers are already thinking it might work better if I do this, or it might work better if I think about the kids at home in this way and the kids here in a different way. And then we also have about 7% of our student population who are full remote, And, you know, it's only been 3 days, so I don't know how it's going for them. I do know we will be checking in. And I know the students who are on campus wish they were on campus every day.
Meanwhile, over at the BRSU, School Superintendent Randy Lowe said, so far so good, and described how the remote learning experience for students will be different from that which had been put in place very quickly last spring.
This week we started with about 20% of our students in our schools, and all of our teachers are in the buildings, and we have students in different configurations in schools right now. It's been giving us a chance to practice all of our health and safety protocols, get transportation, make sure that the plans that we had in place are working, and adjust and tweak as we need to be as efficient as we can with everything that needs to be happening in our schools right now, and to have everybody be really familiar with what it's going to look like and feel like before we bring the rest of our kids back. An average of our six schools, about 22% of families who opted for a full distance learning option through the BRSU.
Okay.
We've given those families, there'll be three kind of onboarding times in which a family might decide, okay, I've done distance learning, but now I'd like my child to come back. The first of those dates is the beginning of November. The second one is right after our December breaks when we come back in January. And the third one is right after April vacation.
I guess what's the main difference between what's happening now remotely compared to what was going on in the spring?
There are a couple of pretty significant differences. As you said, we had to quickly shift models last March. We gave a lot of freedom and flexibility to teachers and essentially allowed everyone to figure out what was going to work best for them, which meant we had wide variability in the learning management platform that students were learning from, in the times that students were working live synchronously with their classmates and with their teacher and doing work by themselves at home. There's just the amount of variability and expectations ran the gamut. So now we heard from many, many people that that was very confusing and overwhelming. Students had, you know, family had multiple students, multiple children in their families. It was many, many emails, variability in what their kids got. It was pretty chaotic. And so we've put some clear, consistent expectations in place so that the experience throughout our system is much more stable and predictable. So new material will be provided on the same days of the week. So families and students know that those are the times that everybody will be putting information in. We have consistent learning management platforms. So our younger students will be using a platform called Seesaw and our older students using Google Classroom. And our teachers have received extensive training in how to teach and how to manage learning through a learning management system.
Vermont is fortunate to be one of the states with the lowest infection positivity rates in the nation. And that makes reopening school in Vermont with in-person learning much more viable, said Education Secretary Dr. Daniel French.
The start of any school year is complex, logistically speaking, but you know, this year is just a different level altogether. So I'm witnessing the work that people were putting into the preparations. I'm not surprised that the opening has gone well. And I think, you know, on a sort of an anxiety level, I'm also pleased to see, you know, that people are joyfully celebrating reopening school, which is sort of our instinctual reaction as educators, or how we approach thinking the start of the school year as a new beginning for students and for teachers. So, you know, I think that's all great. You know, we are certainly reminding people this is just the beginning. We're going to be in this phase for a while, and it's important, particularly from a public health perspective, that school districts maintain a vigilant disposition towards implementing health guidance, and that families and our larger community continue as well to do, you know, wear a mask, social distance, and so forth, because it's a again, it's really the high degree of suppression of the virus that we've achieved as a state that has allowed us to reopen our schools. So it's important that we maintain that if we're going to be successful.
Did you ever give any serious consideration to having like one uniform state plan for reopening as opposed to, let's say, the flexible approach that you went with? Was there ever any thought that, you know, hey, one uniform approach would be easier for people, or?
Yeah, well, no, you know, I did evaluate it for sure. I mean, I think you're familiar with my leadership to know I'm a very practical person in that regard. And I, you know, I appreciate Vermont NEA put forward a proposal that would have been a more top-down approach, so to speak. And I evaluated that plan on its merits. And I think it was offered in the vein of being constructive. But it was rejected by the superintendents, by the principals, by the school boards, associations as well, not just by me. I think largely because it was impractical. And, you know, I certainly spent my career working in Vermont schools, so I have some appreciation of the diversity of the delivery system. So I just, you know, from a practical standpoint, with that knowledge, looking at across the landscape and saying, well, on the one hand, here is very consistent and very prescriptive health guidance, I think, that we did create. So, I mean, that's the first point I'd make, is that we do have a very heavy top-down approach when it comes to the health guidance. That's non-negotiable. And we expect that to be implemented in every setting. But the settings are so different across the state that, it, you know, our plans had to factor in that diversity. And, you know, as I look across the country, I can't point to a single state that has a single top-down approach to doing this. I mean, every state's had to make some accommodation to the diversity of its educational delivery system. And arguably, Vermont has one of the most diverse educational delivery systems. You know, I believe Maryland, for example, has 24 school districts. You know, Vermont has 200 some odd. So it's, you know, any plan would have to acknowledge that context. And we've done our best, I think, to support people to do that. But it's a complex delivery system in spite of our relatively small number of students.
The news came out Monday that two students at the Crossett Brook Middle School in Duxbury tested positive for COVID, a reminder that even with the lowest infection rates in the country, the virus is still lurking. A smooth return to in-person learning over the period of the next few weeks and months is far from guaranteed. In Duxbury, the school there will be closed to in-person learning while testing and contact tracing procedures are conducted. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.